welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Hi, this is Jessica with Syosset Libraries Turn the Page podcast, and I am welcoming back one of our guests. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hey, I'm Emily Newitz. I'm a science journalist and a science fiction writer, so I get to tell the truth about science and then make a bunch of stuff up in different places. I don't mix them together.
And you wrote like one of my favorite books of 2019, Future of Another Timeline, and I literally just get on a hill and beat the drum of read this book to everybody I know.
Thank you so much.
Oh, it's so good. And one of the reasons I wanted to reach out to you this is one of our special episodes that we're doing during the COVID-19 crisis. And
yeah,
one of the thoughts I had as this began was this must feel really, really surreal for people who write science fiction.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a sense of, you know, we told you so, but not in a very happy way. Like, it's hard to enjoy that when the we told you so is like we're all in mortal danger. But both in my fictional writing and in my science journalism, I've talked a lot about pandemics and how they're inevitable and what we need to do to mitigate that danger. And, you know, I've been watching over the years as the government has been rolling back a bunch of programs. I remember the day that Trump disbanded the pandemic oversight group. It was basically a pandemic surveillance group in the government that was sort of working with the government and working with healthcare officials to basically keep an eye out for emerging outbreaks. And when that disappeared, I remember just saying to my friends, like, yep, this is really bad. Like, this is the beginning of a very, very bad situation. And it's pretty shocking to me. And then it was even more shocking to me that I was right. Even though I knew I was right, it was just not exactly the way I wanted to be right.
Yeah, so it's weird to me for so many reasons. And, you know, I like science fiction. I'm not a science, you know, I don't know as much as other people, but there's so many stories and situations that you read about or you consume. And I guess from my point of view, I'm like, ha ha ha, that can't happen, right? And people I know who are, you know, more science versed and in the sciences and know more about immunology are like,
we knew it was coming, but you know, all of us hoped it wouldn't, right?
And, of course.
I was just talking with Mike Chen, who has a book that just came out called A Beginning at the End, which I highly recommend. And he spent, you know, the past, you know, more than a year working on a book about a pandemic, very much like the one that we're experiencing now, although much more deadly. It kills a huge part of the population. I think it's something like 70%. So, you know, it's not as bad as his pandemic, but he describes a world that is coming out of its quarantine after about 6 years of battling this virus. And it feels so vivid and real, especially because it's set in San Francisco, which is where I live. So a lot of it feels, you know, really on the nose. But he really captures something that I think we don't see a lot in science fiction about pandemics, which is the kind of emotional cost on an everyday level of what going through this trauma of having to stay inside and losing loved ones and not being able to see them when you lose them and feeling just completely isolated and separated from the usual communities that we're part of. And So what's nice about his novel, for those of us who are living through this, is that it is about coming out on the other side and how people start to heal and start to reconnect with each other. But he was saying, you know, the same thing I'm saying, which is, you know, I didn't want this to happen. And it's just surreal to see all of these measures being put in place that he'd kind of been imagining for all that time. And he also talks about the economic fallout and how, you know, the country is just plunged into this incredible depression, and how part of the recovery is economic as well as psychological.
And I have to note here that you have with Charlie Jane Anders a podcast called Our Opinions Are Correct. Correct?
That is correct.
Correct. Where
we had Mike on the podcast talking about his book.
So that was funny because I was about to say listen to it because it's amazing. But another thing that kind of tipped me off, it came up in my Twitter feed that was what your topic was about. And between my thought, like, this must be weird for science fiction authors, and, oh, I know Anna Lee. I interviewed them a while ago. Maybe I should reach out. That kind of came together into this idea for a special episode. So, without any further ado, as a science fiction writer and as a science journalist, what are you and your peers consuming during this pandemic? Are you able to? I've heard from a lot of readers that they're absolutely not able to concentrate on reading. I haven't found that, but I understand why.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, I mean, I have been able to, you know, get reading done, and I've been watching a lot of TV as distraction. Both the reading and the TV are kind of distraction, because I have been writing a lot about the pandemic for the New York Times and other places. And so it's nice to kind of go into a space where, you know, I can have a book that isn't entirely escapist, but that still feels really hopeful. And so one of the books that jumps out at me right away, and that I'm sure a lot of your listeners will be familiar with, is N.K. Jemisin has a new novel that just came out that's called The City We Became. And it's about New York City and a group of people who discover that they're actually kind of spiritual avatars of the city, and that the city is itself kind of coming to life. And there's a lot of cosmic meanings behind what that is. And I don't want to give too much away, but what's really fantastic about that book and reading that book right now is that I think all of us in the United States are feeling the hurt of New York City and feeling so much sympathy for the people who are there and who are dealing with the front lines of this pandemic and having to cope with, you know, everything from mixed messages from the federal government to just, you know, terror about how fast it's spreading. And this novel is all about how New York City comes together as a community to fight off the forces of darkness. And the forces of darkness kind of look a little bit like a pandemic. They take a lot of different forms, but there's definitely a sense that the city is being infected by a dark otherworldly force, and only through banding together with neighbors, banding together across racial lines and class lines, that's how the city is going to be able to triumph. And it's such a great invocation of community. It made me feel so good. And it's the first in a trilogy, so that's very exciting, because it gives you a satisfying ending, but you clearly know there's more at the end. And so I'm sure that Jemisin is hard at work on the next book. And
we love N.K. Jemisin. We love.
Yes, it's definitely a departure for her, because it's set on Earth, and she hasn't written a lot of stuff that's set on Earth, and it's in the present day. And like I said, it's just such a great, it felt like a salve on my soul when I was reading it, because I was just, like I said, I was so sad about what was going on in New York, and I was like, okay, New York can do it. Like, this is a great, hopeful book. And along those lines, I'd also recommend a new book from Sarah Gailey, which is a novella called Upright Women Wanted, which is a post-apocalyptic book. It's set about, I'm not sure, maybe a century in the future. There's been some terrible disaster that's turned the United States back into kind of a frontier days type place. And so people live in small towns. They get around on horseback. And one of the main characters is a young woman who's growing up and realizing that she's queer, and she lives in this town where people are quite conservative. But then the librarians come to town in
yes.
a covered wagon with all their books. And they are not just librarians, but they're fighting librarians. And they rescue queer people who are being oppressed and spread knowledge. And there's like, there's beautiful evocations of why reading is the greatest, and also like some pretty great like gunfights on the range, and just again this beautiful sense of community, which it just left me feeling like, okay, I can have faith in my fellow humans again. So I would really recommend that as like a book to feel better.
Yeah, I got a chance to get an ARC of that back last October, and I mean, I find it as a librarian, I find it. I can't use one word. I find it a lot of things funny, empowering, that somehow, I mean, there's so many science fiction or alternate history books, like, or just in general, where librarians are knowledge brokers, but specifically librarians are somehow these super powered beings that fight oppression and evil. And I love it. I'm not 100% sure how it always happens, but I love it. So
Don't ask any questions about it. It's one of those pieces of writing where it's just pure crack fiction. You know, it's just designed to make you feel better and have a scenario that just feels right psychologically, even if, you know, I mean, I don't know. I could imagine like gunslinging librarians.
As a librarian, I thank you all of you sci-fi, alternate history writers who write about these fighting post-apocalyptic librarians saving the world, because I think so many of us would dream of that lifestyle. So thank you.
Yeah, totally. It definitely made me feel like I wanted to do like more horseback riding in like big empty prairies and stuff. So so that's a project for another era. So another book that I wanted to mention that is actually, I guess it came out maybe a little over a year ago. It's a book by Robin Sloan, and it's called Sourdough. And speaking of, you know, heroic librarians and also bookstore owners, Robin Sloan's first novel, Mr. Penumbra's 24-Hour Bookstore, was a total delight. And
yes.
So this is his follow-up. And it's also set in San Francisco and deals with kind of the clash between tech companies and people who are more attached to traditional ways of life. In this case, the traditional way of life is cooking from scratch, not eating, you know, pre-prepared Soylent that is like, I guess, Soylent is this drink where you're supposed to get all your nutrition from this like white gross chalky drink,
which is knowingly named after that old Soylent Green, which I don't want to spoil it for people, but just Google it. I mean, I'm sure most people know, but not everybody. Google what Soylent Green is.
Why would you name your food product after that? I don't know.
They did it on purpose. If you go to their website, they have an explanation, and I'm still like, why?
So the great thing about Sloan's book, Sourdough, is that it's kind of pitting two groups of people against each other in San Francisco. One group is people who are rediscovering the joy of cooking, and the other group are people who are eating this thing called slurry. And slurry is clearly supposed to be Soylent. And the main character is designing robot arms and is interested in using them to help her make bread. And she gets very interested in sourdough and acquires a sourdough starter that seems to be maybe sentient. I'm not quite sure. And that's one of the mysteries of the book. And it just, during this time, during these quarantines that we've been in, so many people have become obsessed with sourdough bread.
It's crazy.
Making their own bread. It's nuts. And I keep thinking about this novel, which feels now prescient in ways that are really strange. Like, so if you have become really interested in sourdough in your cooking, or if you just love stories about how people, you know, reconcile technology with like more ordinary pleasures in life that don't require machines. It's just, it's a very gentle book. It's really funny and quirky. And it does there is a kind of a showdown between the two sides. So there's a kind of action-packed conclusion. But like all of Robin Sloan's writing, the pleasure is really in getting to know the characters and understanding them and why Sourdough Starter is so important to their personal lives. And so that's a really great one. I definitely think that that would be a good quarantine summer book. Let me finish up with three more recommendations, some of which are going to make you sad and some of which will make you feel great. So one novella that I have been obsessed with for a while, came out a couple of years ago, is P. Jelly Clark's novella called The Black God's Drum. And it's a YA story. It's set in an alternate history where the Civil War turned out slightly differently, and the Caribbean has become a really important scientific and political force in the world. And a Caribbean mad scientist has invented a weapon, and a bunch of spies are trying to get it, and there's a lot of back and forth about how they're going to find this mad scientist. But the story revolves around a street urchin who lives in Louisiana and kind of overhears these spies making these big plans. And she becomes kind of at the center of this conspiracy without meaning to, and meets up with a airship captain who's kind of she's a vigilante for justice. And she has this amazing airship because, of course, all these characters have like Zeppelin technology and like
as they do, yes,
know, as you should. It's great because it's steampunk where all of the usual tropes of steampunk are turned on their heads. You know, the Caribbean is centered as kind of as this really important scientific place in the world, and all of the characters or most of the characters are people of color.
I love that.
And so it's. I love it too. And it's, the characters are fantastic. Clark, the writer, in his copious free time is a historian. And so he knows a lot about the history of this period. And there's a lot of really interesting details that as I was reading them, I was like, wait, was that a real thing? Did that really happen? And yes, they did.
Yeah.
So even though it's an alternate history, it helps you learn a lot about the Civil War history that you might not have been exposed to. So that's a great one. And then two more quick recommendations for books that came out this year. Nino Cipri has a novel called Finna, which is about a zany adventure in a retail store that's a little bit like IKEA. And these characters are working kind of dead-end, crappy jobs, the kind of jobs that actually, unfortunately, don't exist right now when we're in quarantine.
Yeah.
And they discover that at this store, there's a portal into many, many other dimensions. And it's just kind of a known thing. Like the management is like, yeah, during training, we'll kind of tell you about how, like, you know, sometimes when you go into that model living room, you just wind up in like a model living room in another universe. And this store exists in like multiple universes. And so the main character and their ex, girlfriend get trapped in a multiverse adventure together. And so partly it's just this crazy, it reminded me a little bit of A Wrinkle in Time, because they're kind of skipping through a bunch of different universes, some of which are really scary, some of which are just really mystical, and all of which are set in these really weird retail environments.
I like love
increasingly more bizarre. But it's also about these two people who've had a breakup and how they need to work through their emotional problems. So there's like awesome, like relationship energy, but also just this wonderful, mystical kind of anti-capitalist fairy tale about retail work. So Finna, highly recommend. And then my final recommendation is for a new novel the first novel from K.M. Sparra. And he is a he's not going to make you feel too good. This is a bit of a depressing novel about a near future where people are saddled with debt from many generations. So like if your grandfather had school debt, you can inherit it. And a lot of people in the working class have like millions of dollars in debt. And so they wind up selling themselves into indentured servitude. And what they do to make that process less upsetting is they take a drug called docilium, which kind of just makes you really spaced out and obedient and forgetful. And so the idea is that you take docilium during your period of indenture for a few years, and then when you're done and you go off the drug, you won't really remember it, so it won't be so bad that you had to, you know, obey a bunch of orders and wash floors for 2 years. And the main character, he sells himself into indenture because his family owes so much money, and he decides not to take the drug. And he's the first person who's ever done that. And it's an incredibly interesting look at this future world where it feels kind of plausible.
Yeah.
And what it means for this person to allow himself to be enslaved, but also refuse to be mind controlled in that process. And there winds up being some pretty sexy stuff going on. There's a kind of a romance that's a not a very happy, it's a gothic romance. You know, there's, it's not a, a good scene, but there is some spicy stuff. So there's definitely that will fuel.
If you have a fainting couch at home, get it ready.
Exactly. If you have a fainting couch at home, you may need to fan yourself.
Get the spelling salts out.
Would recommend getting out the smelling salts for like hot gay sex, if not love. And it, ultimately, even though it is a dark vision, this is a book that suggests that there is a way that we can get out of this situation. So it isn't, you know, a grim dystopia. It's a dystopia where people are trying to figure out how to fight back. And it felt like the perfect book for a time when so many of us are struggling with debt, especially people who are struggling with student debt, and trying to make their way in a world where it just doesn't seem like you can get a start when you have so much debt on your shoulders. And so this is, like I said, it gives you a little spiciness, a little fainting couch action, and also awesome social justice. So that's Docile by K.M. Sparrow.
Amazing. Thank you. This has been really great. I think that one of my favorite things about this is that there's such a range of recommendations. I mean, really, there's a little something for everything, for everybody. And most of the books, I don't, I think, you know, N.K. Jameson is a big name. And you mentioned who wrote Mr. Penumbra's 24 book.
Yeah, Robin Thorne.
But a lot of them, I think, are names that, you know, might be new to some people. And I love it. It's wonderful.
Yeah, and keep an eye on these folks because they're all amazing upcoming writers, and they're all their works are just so entrancing. So
yeah,
definitely put it on your bookshelf. Get ready for a nice socially isolated summer with some new fictional friends.
Thank you so much. And I just wanted to throw out to our listeners once again, Anna Lee has some wonderful books out. I recommend any of their books and their podcast. Our opinions are correct, which is a lot of good stuff as well. And thanks so much for speaking with us again.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Okay, and I am going to close this chapter of Turn the Page.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.